Welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast, where we're serving up gospel-fueled courage to the Christian woman to remain faithful in her calling. Hello, welcome to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast. I am Jordan Sparks, and Becky and Kate are here at my house with me today, which makes me happy. I like it when we're live.
Me too.
I just really like it because it feels very natural. Like,
yeah,
I feel like I'm actually talking to you guys because I'm actually talking to you guys. But today we are actually going to talk about something that we don't normally talk about. I feel like this is a not on brand episode. Do you feel like that a little bit?
Yes.
I feel like it's very not on brand.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think it's because we are very pro-motherhood.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. And this isn't an episode that's going to turn anti-motherhood or anything like that. But in honor of Mother's Day, we're going to talk about the... Whenever I was pitching this episode topic to them, I said, I don't know what I said, the hardest parts of motherhood and what you do about it, or like tactics you use to help with it.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, just come with like 3 to 5 of what you think is the hardest things about motherhood.
Yeah.
And I was so excited to hear what you guys are going to say, because it's not a part of our culture in our church or our friendships to talk about this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because most often, it's not helpful,
right,
to just like air everything you think is hard right now about motherhood or marriage, or, you know, and hopefully that it won't be like that today. But it is a part of our culture to help each other troubleshoot.
Yes.
And that is something that we do a lot, I feel like, in our friendships.
Yes.
Is talk about something that's going on and like, help me solve this puzzle. That's what I always say. I like puzzle solving. So whenever someone asks me for prayer, if I will pray for them, and I've recently thought about this, should I not do this so much? I say, yes, I'll pray for you. You're shaking your head no. But I also am like, have you thought about this and this and this? And can I offer this? And sometimes I'm like, people probably think, Jordan, I'm not asking you to solve my problems. I can't stop playing that a bit. It's making more noise. But I like to help solve puzzles for people. So anytime someone has something going on and they ask me for prayer, I am praying for them, and I do pray. But I also, my brain starts firing with puzzle solving.
Yes.
Sometimes I think it is helpful to talk about what is hard in mothering because we can help each other troubleshoot. And then also, sometimes it's helpful to know you're not crazy and you're not the only one that's dealing with that hardship of motherhood. Because sometimes you wonder, is it just me? Am I the only one that finds this part difficult? I don't want to sound like a feminist and think
imagine a world where I would sound like a feminist.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, this is not a, swing the pendulum in an effort to commiserate with everyone. But this is an episode where we're going to talk about what we think is the hardest part about motherhood.
Yeah.
So,
but I think,
buckle up.
I think the anti-feminist part comes in where we talk about why that's not a bad thing. Just because it's difficult doesn't mean it's bad. Even if the situation can be bad, it doesn't mean that it's bad that you're facing a trial or a struggle or something. And there are healthy ways to deal with it.
Yeah.
If you're going to look at motherhood and go, oh my gosh, it's going to be so hard because of this, that, or the other, therefore I won't go there. Well, yeah. Congratulations. You just joined a feminist camp. But if you're going to talk about, you know, like you said, we're going to talk about the hard parts, but then, okay, now what? And I was saying no earlier, Jordan, because I cherish that about our friendship. And Kate, you're very similar too, where Jordan, I voxered you last week. Our family's been sick for like, I feel like 100 years. I know that's an exaggeration. It's really probably been 6 weeks.
99 years.
At least 99. 99. It's been 84 years.
Yeah.
but it's just, it has been a long season. And last week we got hit with, no, maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I don't know. It's all a time warp at this point. We got hit with RSV, pneumonia, and a second round of strep for a couple of the people in our family. And I was voxering you, Jordan, about it. I was like, this is what's going on. You know, pray for us. I don't know what to do here. And you were praying, but then you also were like, what about this? Have you tried doing this? Have you, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's helpful because sometimes when you're in a pit and you're thinking, okay, this is difficult. You can't see the ladder that's right behind you.
Yeah.
You can't see, okay, how do I get out of here? Because you're so stressed out in the moment or
and
overwhelmed
tired.
With stuff yeah. and exhausted.
Your brain has mushed weeks
yes.
ago.
So you don't even think about the fact that it could be this, that, or the other. Mm-hmm. And so that's helpful in a friendship to have somebody who says, yes, I'm praying for you actively right here, but also, have you slept?
Mm-hmm.
Do you need coffee? Mm-hmm. Has anybody else had this symptom? You may not have this, you might have that, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I had an older woman that mentored me. It's been when Ransom was a baby, probably. So it's probably been 10 years ago. They've moved since, and I miss her a lot. But she was very much like that, and I cherished it. She would pray for me, but she'd also be like, this is how you meal plan.
Yeah.
Or this is practically what you should do, that here is something that would help with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I found that so, so helpful because it was ministering to the spiritual side of it and also to the human side of mm-hmm. what was happening. So anyway, so today we're going to talk about the 3 to 5 most difficult things about motherhood to us and then what we do to help that situation in our own lives. So
I think possibly I feel this one the most strongly seasonally, I guess, because I feel like I was just there and I'm about to be there again, but postpartum and baby stage was super hard for me. And not in a, oh shoot, I didn't want this kind of way, but just, and I've talked about this before on the podcast, but I was in a very different mindset of career mindedness and that kind of thing. And I know that played into it, but I remember not realizing that there were going to be a lot of hormones. And I remember when you brought me a meal, I was probably 3 or 4 days postpartum. And I said, Jordan, I feel crazy. And you said, you are. But it gets better.
Yeah.
You said, take it day by day, hour by hour, do what you have to do, try to get sleep, and then you'll look back in a few weeks, a few months, and it will be different. It will be better. And I think, and that's something I was actually talking to a friend yesterday about it, that who is not a mother, but is basically an aunt to a ton of kids in our church. And I said, you're one of the only people who is not a mother yet that I feel comfortable kind of divulging more about early motherhood too, because I, you know, you always want to err on that side of, well, I don't want to scare people into and say, well, this was really difficult for me, so it will be for you too. And every mom is going to have a different, like every woman is going to have something different that maybe is harder about the early stages of motherhood. And it maybe wouldn't be for me. So it's just interesting because postpartum is not difficult for everyone.
Right.
Like the early baby stage is not
yeah.
for everybody.
Yeah.
But for me, it was with Audrey, and so I've changed a lot of things to make it not that way, and I've thought about things differently to make it not that way for when Oliver gets here. But for me, that is one of the seasons that just really I struggled quite
so
a bit.
What are some things that you're doing this time?
Yeah,
maybe.
So I didn't realize that I needed to be nutritionally focused mm-hmm. with Audrey postpartum. And quite frankly, I just didn't have the time to figure it out. I was looking into a lot of other health things. I was starting my non-toxic journey postpartum, and that's just not a good idea. Just try to start it earlier.
Naughty rabbit holes
yeah.
to go down.
Too much. And there's if you have anxiety postpartum, it's just not a good time for that to do a rabbit trail down anything. But yes, I know what I need to do nutritionally now, and that's one of my big things is going to be prepping snacks, and also I've thought a lot about, I had a lot of anxiety about putting Audrey down mm-hmm. and giving her to other people, mm-hmm. even like people like my mom, who I would trust with my kid's life 100%, but I know that that could be a struggle again, so I let myself be sleep deprived for a really long time with Audrey because I had to watch her constantly breathe. And maybe part of that's a first time mom thing too, or maybe not, but I just know. So one thing that I'm doing overall that I think will help a lot is writing myself letters.
That's sweet.
from the me now that is emotionally well and stable to the me in a few months that might be a little weepy and scared or anxious about different things. And so that's a huge thing, writing down scripture that I know helped me the first postpartum. I've already told multiple people, hey, if I get this way or if I have these thoughts, just shut it down. You know, just tell me, hey, we've been here before, not helpful, we're moving on. And I appreciate bluntness in my friendships. And so I think most people that I'm friends with know that. But I've told multiple people, hey, you have free rein to see things going awry and say, hey, I'm really suggesting that you do X, Y, Z instead. So I think just knowing ahead of time my tendencies and knowing that, and also planning for Audrey. I already have planned for fun things for her, little activities, things to loop her in. And just knowing that I will have to fight that tendency of anxiety again makes me feel more confident that I can do it better and to the glory of God. Whereas before, it's not that I didn't want to do it to the glory of God, but I oftentimes went down a lot of anxiety trails and a lot of just fear-based newborn stage versus actually enjoying it.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't remember which child it was. I realized this. I think Valor. We were living here. So I realized that there was this direct link between feeling weird and off hormonally and sleep deprivation. And Jared helped me connect those dots. And anytime that I started to feel weird, he would immediately be like, you need to take a nap.
Yep.
This is 100% a sleep situation. And I would take a nap and then wake up and be like, what was wrong? And I would think that it was anxiety or something like that. And I'm like, oh, it's actually my body is literally revolting against itself and my mental state can't handle this right now and I have to sleep.
Right.
And so for everything to be functioning right, for your body to be producing the right kind of hormones, you actually have to have sleep and you have to have the right nutrition. And those are two things that are super hard to do when you have a newborn baby. So yeah, I think you're really smart prioritizing those two things. And just when you're starting to feel anxious, that's your trigger.
Yes.
Take a nap.
Yeah.
And eat some protein.
I ate a lot of pasta with Audrey postpartum.
Sounds delicious.
It was delicious. And I needed the carbs, but it wasn't fulfilling all of my needs, you know?
Yeah.
And looking back, a lot of the anxiety was just sleep deprivation related because once I got out of the sleep deprivation, even now I can tell if I lose a lot of sleep, I get weird.
Brain gets real weird. Fast.
And I'll often text a friend and say, I'm getting weird. Can I come hang out? Can we go do something?
Can you watch my cat? Can Audrey and I? Yes.
Especially important in postpartum. Sometimes now it's like, I need to go get fresh air and go to the park. And I'll go to bed early.
Or sometimes you need to literally go to sleep at 7 o'clock at night.
Yes.
And not feel weird about that. And go to sleep at 7 o'clock at night. And I think for some reason, like, we resist that so bad. And it's like, why? Just go to bed.
Yep. And I think...
grown up toddlers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I also think... I used to think I was a night owl. And I can be, if needed. But I think one of the biggest things is if I go to bed early and wake up early, I just feel so much better. Mm-hmm. Like, if I get 8 hours and I go to bed at 8 and I get 8 hours, I feel better waking up at 4 a.m. than I do if I go to bed at midnight and wake up at 8.
And sometimes in postpartum, that sleep, you're not going to get 8 to 9 hours in a row.
No.
You're not.
No.
You just have to accept the fact that for that season, that's not what it's going to be. But what that means is other things need to take a back burner.
Yes.
So that your sleep can take a priority.
Yeah.
And that might mean asking somebody to come and help with the other kids so that you can take a nap.
Yeah.
That might mean, you know, if it's your first baby, that means letting other things go so that you can sleep when the baby sleeps. And I know people laugh at that, but you really can. Mm-hmm. You really can. And there's ways around it. Things might look like they're, you know, going south for there for a little bit, but the house will recover. It's going to be fine.
Right.
You need to prioritize your health in that season.
Yes.
No, it's just a season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend that her husband went to bed later than she did. So she would take the opportunity while he was awake, staying up a little later, she would go to bed really early. And then he was just on duty for those, you know, she went to bed at 7 and he didn't go to bed till 11. You have a block there of uninterrupted sleep that the dad gets to be on duty. And then she would take the rest of the night. But that's a nice little block that, you know,
people kind of don't realize could be a block.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, too, once you have a child, you realize, wow, 4 hours feels fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You get a four-hour nap or a four-hour stretch of sleep. You're like, that's a man.
I feel like a new woman.
Entire sleep
cycle. We can have 12 kids. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. I can totally do this.
Yeah.
But in those early times, it is hard.
Yeah.
Okay, Becky, give us one of yours.
Okay. So I'll just start with the hardest first. The hardest thing for me is I have a broken relationship with my mom. And I know I alluded to that a little bit in our contentment episode, but family dynamics on my side are just really, really heartbreaking and challenging. And we have sought peace as best as we can. And we're just kind of at a point where it just is what it is for right now. And the hardest thing that I never even thought would be a thing, but learning how to mother when you don't have a mother, mm-hmm. and learning how to mother when you don't have an example from your growing up years, from your adult years of this is the kind of woman I want to be. Not that any woman is perfect, you know. They're going to, you know, all of our mothers are sinners. Everyone's a sinner. So there's not going to be a perfect motherhood example. But I didn't realize how devastating that would be and how hard it would be and how much I would want to rely on that. Mm-hmm. Until it wasn't there. And I realized, wow, I was really putting a lot of hope in that person. And regardless of whether you have a healthy relationship with your mother or not, ultimately, it was hard for me to learn that I needed to shift my focus from an earthly person to emulate mm-hmm. to I need to look at how does the father parent? How does the Lord parent us? How does God parent us? But there's still, and I think it, I can speak from a daughter perspective because I'm not a son. But to me, I feel like there's more of that as a daughter. There's more of that, you know, you have a hard day, you want to call your mom. Mm-hmm. There's something that goes wrong and you don't know how to handle a situation with your child and you want to call your mom. Or even as an adult, or even as a mom, like you become a mom and you don't realize how much of your mothering instincts are linked to how you were nurtured growing up. And if you're looking at a childhood that had trauma, or you're looking at a childhood that was not the kind of parenting that you want your children to have, trying to essentially ask the Lord to rewire those defaults is really challenging, because essentially what, at least for me, what the Lord has done is just kind of stripped everything back to the studs mm-hmm. of, okay, I'm just, all of this is just gone. And I'm going to teach you and guide you and walk you through what it looks like to parent the way that I parent. And that has been, I'm not sure if there's words to put, to describe how devastating that was, but how beautiful it's been to walk through with the father of, okay, he is a good father. And there's a verse, you sent it to me last week, Kate, what was it? It's in Psalms, and now I can't remember it. I had it in my head, but about how the father, the shepherd, gently cares for those who have young.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And he really does shepherd his lambs gently. And he guides us gently, and he loves us so much. Here it is. Oh, good job, Kate. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those that have young. And that's Isaiah 40, verse 11. And that verse has been so helpful and such a picture, because when you're looking at, okay, I have an example of what I don't want to be, but what do I want to be? Again, look. For me, what's been helpful in that is looking to scripture and seeing, okay, he gently leads those that have young, which means, what do? I gently lead my children. Mm-hmm. I lead them in gentleness. I teach them with patience. I teach them with kindness. And that doesn't mean that you're going to have perfect days. And I think that is also a hard part that's coupled with that for me, is sometimes that default of how I was parented or treated comes out. And then it's just gut-wrenching of, that's not what I want my children's childhood to be like. That's not what I want my relationship with my children to be like. And if you're in that season or you're also in that same kind of battle and struggle, my encouragement to you would be repair that relationship with them. Go to your child, be humble and say, hey, mama was wrong. I should not have talked to you that way. I should not have said this or done this. And I need to ask for your forgiveness and show the example for them of how to pray through that situation. But if you're in a season where maybe you're adopted and you don't know who your birth mom is, and that's a challenge, or maybe you don't have a good relationship with your mom, or maybe your mom has passed away, figuring out how to mother without a mother, look to the Lord for that example. Because ultimately, like I said, all of the earthly examples, even the best moms, you know, I think about Sally Clarkson. When I think about the kind of mom I want to be, I think of, you know, Sally Clarkson. She's gentle spirit. She loves her kids. She has good relationships with her adult children. Her adult children want to write books with her. Like, just the sweetest picture there. But even she has made mistakes and is not a perfect mother, and none of us will be a perfect mother, but look to the Father to be those things.
From a friend and outsider's perspective, it has been really cool, though, to see you and Brandon make new traditions and make your family yours. And through the difficulty of what you guys have been through, God has used it to make you guys really strong in your family unit. And that has been really cool to see. And I've seen God work in your family. So
that's really encouraging.
Yeah, it's been cool. And also just, I am close with my mom, and I have the opposite struggle of, like, my mom would have never said that to me growing up. Mm-hmm. What, my mom would have never lost her cool. Like, I just lost my cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think there's always that you're either comparing to the positive or the negative sometimes of, like, I wish I wouldn't have been like that. Mm-hmm. Or I wish I would have done that better. So, yeah, I think it's all relying on God's grace, too, of, like, Lord, please grow these children into the people you want them to be, and please maintain our relationship in the midst of it.
Yeah. I remember asking when the relationship between me and my mom was officially just kind of halted. I remember kind of panicking and, you know, feeling like someone who can't swim thrown into the deep end and just flailing like, what do I do? What do I do? You know? And so I started asking, looking at older moms in the church, even who were just like a step ahead of me. It didn't even have to be super far ahead. Some of them were, you know, but just asking other moms, you know, questions that I had, things that I would call my own mom for. I started looking for otherwise godly counsel within the church of, okay, who can I go to ask this question? Who do I see do this well? And I was talking to a friend one day, and I was asking her, you know, how do you parent in this kind of situation? And she just looked at me and she's like, it's just God's grace. Mm-hmm. It's just God's grace. I'm not a perfect mom. Mm. I mess up all the time. I don't say the right things all the time. I don't do the right things all the time. And not to say, and this mom by no means wallows in that, but her response has just echoed in my mm-hmm. head of, it's just the Lord's grace. Mm-hmm. Pray, 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 pray. And it's the Lord's grace. And at first I was like, well, what kind of advice is that? Like, what am I supposed to
not
do
with that?
Yeah. I want something that I can do today. And I mean, I could go home and pray for my children, and I did. But I've seen even more now, when I see good fruit in my children, when I know my own faults and my own sins and shortcomings, and then to see God grow that good fruit in them, it's like, oh, Lord, that is your grace, because that's not anything I did.
Yeah.
There's not an ounce of me that came from. That is your grace and your goodness pouring into my kids' spirits and overflowing out the top of their heads, mm-hmm. you know? And it's so encouraging to know, okay, that's not me. Mm-hmm. And I really can. And Kate, like you were saying, even with a newborn baby, you know, you lay them down in the crib or next to you in the bed or wherever, and you kind of look at them. And I had that same feeling of, Lord, just keep them breathing.
Yeah.
Just make sure they're going to be okay. And really all of motherhood can be kind of summed up in that of, you lay your child down at the Lord's feet and say, Lord, sustain them.
Mm-hmm.
By your grace, by your goodness, your mercy, sustain them and help me do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we are not the ones keeping them breathing. We're not the ones that grow mm-hmm. the fruit. We steward them, we love them, we nurture them, but ultimately it's the Lord. And it can be stressful. to think that, or it can be a relief of, hey, I'm not going to be perfect and they're going to be okay because the Lord is good, not because I'm good.
It's kind of like Josh's sermon on Sunday. I know you weren't there. You weren't there. It was so good. And it's probably on the podcast stream, but he was talking about in our circles, it's very common to get caught up in the podcast or the book or the thing that's going to like teach you the next whatever that you need to learn. And it comes down to really walking with God. It's about walking with God, communing with God, spending time with the Lord, praying. And that's what sustains us. That's what keeps us going. That's what feeds our souls. And we lose that. We lose that piece of it's about God and having a relationship with Him. And look for the next thing.
I think once we realized too, and that was something that I didn't realize the Lord was growing me in the newborn stage because it was tricky for me, was He was increasing my dependency on Him to where I was literally crying out in the middle of the night, like, you know, morning time. I was like, anytime I was up, I was anxious in the middle of the night. And when the sun would start to peek out, I was reminded of His mercies are new every morning. It doesn't matter it does matter what we've done the day before, like sin impacts, you know. But if we ask forgiveness for the way that we've handled things previously, and we ask our children, if we've wronged them, we ask them for forgiveness and model that, and model a repentant heart and say, hey, mommy had to ask Jesus to forgive her, and I'm sorry I did this. Will you forgive me too? And that's something that is humbling, you know.
Absolutely.
And also, if we start practicing really, really early, giving our child to the Lord, like the Lord will grow you in that, whether you want to be grown in it or not. And I have talked to my mom, who has two grown children. I'm almost 32 and my brother's 28. And she said, I remember a few years ago, she said, Caitlin, you have to work on that habit of giving Audrey over daily, giving her over minute by minute. Because she said, one day your child will leave home and you want them to. You want them to be successful, love the Lord, move on, have a family. But she said, it doesn't mean that we don't still worry about you and Kendall, who's my brother. You know, and so that as a parent, the earlier we learn that because we are wholly dependent on God for our daily breath, and our child is too. And they have to learn dependency on Christ. And so we have to think about, well, how are they going to learn that? I have to model that. I have to model that I'm dependent on Christ for my very breath and my mental state and my status and all that. And we have to model that daily and then daily give them over to the Lord for their physical, mental health, for salvation. And I think, you know, some days it's still hard, especially if you have like a tendency to worry about certain things or whatnot. But it is, I think, more of a habit for me now than it was when she was tiny. And I was like, well, how do I make sure she's still breathing tomorrow, you know? And I didn't. I mean, I couldn't. You physically cannot watch your child all day long to make sure they never get hurt or they never struggle.
Yeah.
But I think as a mom, especially, it's hard to watch your child struggle through something or to fall and trip and smash their face off the concrete like Audrey did. Like, you know, we always want to prevent them from hardship, but the way they learn dependency on Christ is through hardship. And so I think through motherhood, all of our hardships are going to be different, a little bit different at least. And so it does help to have a good mindset. You have to have a positive mindset about motherhood, but it also doesn't hurt to be honest and say, well, this, you know, if there's a new mom who's struggling postpartum, I'm probably going up to her and saying, hey, I've been there. You know, how can we like troubleshoot your, like, what are you struggling with, you know? So I think there's a lot of, you just have to toe that line of not, of as mothers, we want to be positive and we want to be joyful mothers and we love our children very much. We want others to have children. But we also don't want to be so overly positive about everything that everyone's like, well, they just don't struggle. And it's like, well, everyone does, you know. But I think modeling that dependence on on Christ, especially to our children, because they are the disciples that we are focused on making.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And these trials are producing something.
Yes.
Like there's fruit to be had. Trials produce perseverance. Perseverance produces character. And there's things that are happening in us and in our children as we are struggling through these hard parts of motherhood. And it's so cool. Now, my oldest is 10 right now. And it's so cool seeing God work through him to minister to me. And it's like, what? Yeah. When did that start happening? And it's just so neat. Or like seeing even Valor spur me to worship or something like that. It's just, it's very, very cool. And I remember, so there was a night that I was apologizing to the kids about something, you know, and they said that they forgave me and I was getting ready to go to bed, but Ransom could tell that I was still feeling bummed about it. And he was like, hey, his mercies are new every morning. Go to bed, think about the good things. Don't go to bed and think about the bad things. Blah, blah, blah. And just like gave me this cup talk before bed, getting my head in the right place. I'm like, babe, thank you. But it's just so cool seeing your kid grow in a way where they are now encouraging you. And that's just a really, really cool thing. Yeah. And just what a blessing it is to see God through your children, which is awesome. And that's what we want. And all of our kids, God is growing them too. And he learned these things because he's gone through difficult things. And God has grown him, and those things were in vain, and they weren't for nothing, and that's, it's like the hitting your face on the concrete, or all the emotional equivalents of that. It's like those are not for nothing. Like the your kids go growing through different disciplinary issues or whatever it is, those aren't for nothing. So mm-hmm. Cool.
What about you?
I guess I will share one. I don't know which one to share first. You just shared a really honest one, so I guess I'll share a really honest one, and. I almost hate sharing it because I don't want to seem weird and I don't want people to think weirdly of me. I feel sorry for you.
I feel sorry for you.
So one of the hardest things for me in this season, I have five, but this is one of my top five that came to mind, I guess, is going to church on Sundays. Is very hard for me a lot of weeks. I love our church so much and I love everyone there, but it's so hard because Oak is just in a very busy stage, and then my boys are 7 and 10, so they do pretty good, but they're not teenagers or adults or anything, you know what I mean? They're still boys children. That want to whisper to me and go, want to go to the bathroom and get a drink 47 times, and Jared preaches on Sunday mornings, and since there's a lot of Fruitful and Fearless listeners whose husbands are pastors and in ministry, I was like, I just need to be honest, because there might be other people that feel the same way. And Lexi and I did an episode a very long time ago called How to Not Hate Sunday Mornings. And it's because it's easy to fall in the trap of hating Sunday mornings. It's so hard. And I know it's hard for moms that even their husbands aren't on stage preaching, but I feel like a single mom and I feel like everyone's staring at me. And I feel, because we sit in the front and I feel like everyone's staring at me and judging how I'm doing it. And I know these are all lies from the enemy. Everyone's very gracious at our church, but it's super hard. It's super hard to go and have the right heart and to not just be angry shushing. So that's one of mine.
Shushing out of fear.
Yes.
Sometimes I can get in that rut where I'm like, I need you to do this right now.
You're embarrassing me. Yes. Not, I'm trying to train you
right.
to do the right thing and how to manage sitting here for a lot amount of time in the right way and to listen and not training in the way that you should, but shushing out of embarrassment.
Right.
And there's a difference there.
Very.
And so anyways, that's hard. But some things that I have found helpful is trying to pray, because I've always prayed a lot before Sunday mornings that God would help us. But I realized that my prayer for God to help us was more about me getting embarrassed or something like that. And so I've started praying, God, help us to not be a distraction from what you want to do this morning. And maybe what God wanted to do was humble me, you know? So just kind of being okay with whatever God is doing in me that Sunday morning, even if I don't get to hear a single word that is preached, maybe it's God working in me in a different way. Mm-hmm. And just having to be okay with that. And
and being okay with maybe for the season is just me supporting Jared in a different way or whatever it is. But that's definitely a very hard one for me.
So Brandon is not a regular preacher at Christ Church, but he often preaches to fill in, like pulpit fill in the area. So I'm not in an every Sunday situation like you are, but I understand that feeling. And one thing, and I know you and I have talked about this because we both have to do this with our husbands before trips, where I have to tell Brandon, this is my expectation for the trip. I'm expecting to get a fancy coffee somewhere. Yeah. I don't care if we're camping in the middle of nowhere. I would like to be able to be within a 30-minute drive of a cute coffee shop, and I want to sit with my toes in the water for 30 minutes, you know? And if he knows, okay, these are my expectations, then he can make sure that those are met, and you're y'all leave very happy.
Yeah.
And he's going, well, I am expecting to, you know, do whatever, I don't know. So it's been helpful for me to set my expectations and tell myself, I am expecting to go to church today with my children. I am expecting them to have a hard time sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, great. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Super happy it's bread.
If I get to listen to a sermon, fantastic. Mm-hmm. That sounds lovely. But if I have my expectation of I'm going to go hear an entire sermon, my children are going to sit quietly because I picked the best sticker books, then I'm going to be sorely disappointed. Mm-hmm. And we're all going to get in a flurry and feel really discouraged and we're going to leave in a huff.
Yeah.
But setting that expectation, not that you don't set good standards for your children, but realizing, having realistic expectations for it of this is a season, first of all, and they are children. And I'm expecting that my children are going to need me. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting that this is what's going to happen. Because sometimes, like I said, for me at first, I was like, oh, I'm so excited to hear Brandon preach. And then I wouldn't hear an ounce of it. And I was like, oh, I didn't hear a word, you know. But I remember when we went, he filled in at Bree's church and Elsie had just started talking. And Bree, your church is beautiful and it echoes. And it's gorgeous. It's the cutest little country church. But Elsie's standing at the back and she's going, Dada, Dada, and pointing up at the front and like, shh, you know, shushing the baby and shuffling the kids downstairs. But, you know, I could have been disappointed that I didn't hear him preach. But at the same time, I could also be thankful that I have a husband who is preaching, that God has called to that, and be thankful I have children that are going to need some attention for a bit, and that's okay too. But if you go in with too high of expectations, that can be hard.
Yeah. Just to be an encouragement to you guys, since you are ahead of me in the, like, you have more children outside the womb than I currently do. Audrey right now sits quietly by herself because she is, like, not by herself. She doesn't sit in a pew by herself. She sits next to me, but there's two parents to help with her, so it's like a very easy season for us right now. And it was not for a while because baby, early toddler, they just don't want to sit and they don't want to listen and they don't want to, you know, they want to waddle around. And I had a tendency to get really frustrated in that season, but the encouragement part I should get to. So when we started coming to Christ Church, we came from a church full of great people, but everyone sent their kids to the, like, to out of the sanctuary. So I was very unused to noise at all, like having any noise in the sanctuary. And the first Sunday we were there was a family Sunday. And I told
there was no noise.
I was not at all. And I told Ben, and I feel like our other building was more a little more echoey, or maybe I just paid more attention because I didn't have a child yet. So I told Ben, I was like, the sermon was so good. We were in Nehemiah, and I remember it was probably the longest sermon I think I've ever heard Jared preach. And it was a family Sunday, and I was so, it was expository, and we did not come from an expository preaching church primarily. And I told Ben, I said, this was so good, but I don't know what he said sometimes because I was focused on the kids around me, you know? Well, as a parent, I don't focus on anyone else's kids anymore because I'm only focused on mine. But I will say, shortly after, Ben and I were so encouraged by the work that the parents were doing in the sanctuary on Sundays. We were so encouraged watching people parent with joy, even through frustration, and seeing, like, you can tell on some people's faces, probably on mine if I ever have to get up and take Audrey out for some chats or for whatever.
For some chats.
My face doesn't, it shows, you know, everything.
Yeah.
However,
I do these big eyeballs with children all the time.
Yeah.
Why your eyes so big?
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, we could, sometimes on, some people have a poker face and some people do not. But Ben and I were so encouraged as a childless 20-something couple by watching parents, knowing they were kind of frustrated because they had to get up for the 13th time, or, you know, you're doing the same thing. We were so encouraged that we decided to have children immediately. We were like, this is amazing. There are so many people who love their kids. And we would watch people, you know, it's our churches together a lot. Like, people are just together. We're with people constantly and it's super fun. But you kind of get a front row seat to parenting. You get a front row seat to people getting frustrated and then apologizing to their kids if they do something that they're not proud of or that needs to be repented of. You see parents and kids discussing things and disciplining, and it's just the neatest environment. And it's, and of course, we're around people from other churches too that are parenting very similarly, but it has been such an encouragement. Even watching people who probably are getting frustrated in the pews taking their kid out for the second or third time, it was such an encouragement to us that we were like, we have to have kids right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So just be encouraged, because there are people that are in that spot now that we were in, you know, 4 years ago, that are being encouraged, watching the faithfulness of Christian parents in the pews.
Cool.
Yeah, this is kind of my last one, really, but I'm going to combine them together because I made it two, and it kind of ties in with yours. But reframing my brain has had a huge impact, like reframing it biblically. Before I do a task that I need to do, and Audrey wants to help, or she needs to help, or reframing my brain, like on Sunday mornings, when I was, my husband used to work a different job and he couldn't always get off on Sundays to be there with me. So it was me. We were kind of in a tough season in terms of just everything was kind of tough with the job he had. And Audrey was in the season of early toddlerhood, like didn't want to sit. It was difficult. I felt like I could never listen to a sermon, and that was discouraging. But I started reframing my brain and praying before church because I knew it wasn't going to be my ideal. So instead of thinking, oh, great, another Sunday where I get to sit in the pew for 15 seconds and then we go out again and we have a chat and we come back, you know, or I'm playing stickers with her the whole time because otherwise she's going to try to wave at everyone around us. I started reframing it in saying, I get to do this with my child, and I get to do this because it produces XYZ, and I get to model this for her, and I get to, and at first it was really, really hard every single time I did it, because, and even practically in the home, I'm like, in the beginning of toddlerhood, it was like, I get to take 45 minutes with her to unload the dishwasher, and I get to do this. And at first I was like, this is so silly. But then after a while, my brain got so used to it, and it became such a joy to do things with her. And I started to genuinely enjoy doing things, even though it takes longer, but they have to learn how to do things anyway. And so why not do it joyfully with your child? So a lot of reframing had to happen, and a lot of slaps in the face to myself had to happen, because initially I just wanted it all to be about me. Honestly, like, well, if I could get this done faster, then we could do this. Or if I could just go thrifting by myself, then I would be happy and I would be content and I would feel better and refreshed. Then I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, or like going to do something by yourself is wrong. But especially for moms who are with their children a lot, that's just not the reality.
I was going to say, it's not very common. If you're living life for that time of refreshment,
exactly,
and you're going to be withering.
And just being honest, I was for a while. I was like, man, when we get to the point where I can listen to a sermon quietly, I will be content on Sundays. Or if I could just go thrifting by myself, I would be content. And it's just not true. I would do it. And then we'd have a really great Sunday. And I would think, oh, like, you know, I mean, it was, it's nice, but at the same time, that's once every
right
year. I mean, I don't know. So if we're looking for restful motherhood, mm-hmm. you're going to find your rest in Christ, because it's not coming from your people around you. It's not coming from your husband.
It's not coming from your
youth. It's not coming from your time.
Once a year on Mother's Day.
Right. And so it ties into my other one, which is laying down your life daily and hourly, because you just, as a mom, you do that.
Yeah.
You just lay your life down, and your husband, you know, like my husband is the primary moneymaker, and he works hard for that. And I work hard at home, and he works hard outside of the home. And there's got to be that, like, he lays his life down for us in ways that I do not as a mother. And I lay my life down for him in a way that, you know, like, we, it's like a give and take, I guess. Like, Audrey, he and I are both sacrificing for Audrey and for future kids. And so,
and for each other.
And for each other. And so that's a little bit of a dance to figure out when you become a first-time parent. And you can easily get resentful, both of you, like, mm-hmm. both spouses, can you be resentful about the way that the roles change when you become a parent? And that's something that has to be worked through and submitted to Christ. And you look at Scripture and see what Scripture says about what you should be doing as a mom and a wife and a husband and a father. But that constant laying down of what is going to glorify Christ in my life as a mother today. Like, how can I serve my kids without it becoming a kid-centered thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. You know, because I think that's one ditch also.
Mm-hmm. Idolizing.
Yeah, and to where it's like, well, what do they need to do? What do they need emotionally from me every second of the day?
Mm-hmm.
And there's that ditch that I think people can fall into, mm-hmm. of,
especially when you're with your kids 24
hours a day.
It's like easy to think, what do they do? Or what should we do today, centered around them, because they're here.
I remember thinking, Audrey's probably about a year, and I had just quit my job, so I was new at staying home. But I remember Ben being like, I would get overwhelmed, because there's just a ton to do at home. You know, when you're home and you're always mm-hmm. organizing or cleaning, or there's a lot to do and you can do it all joyfully. And that's a different discussion. But I remember telling Ben, I was like, I don't feel like I can get anything done. And part of that's anxiety too. But he, like, when I was going through like my postpartum changes, and he said, you are going to have to set her down and figure out how to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that, and he is a kind, very kind husband, but I appreciate bluntness. So it's not like I said that and it sounded rude, and my husband's not rude to me, but sometimes, I mean, he just knows I need bluntness. And so that's how we talk to each other at times, just really frankly. But he was calling me out, and he was saying, I was being kid centered. And the child cannot be the center of your relationship with Christ. It can't be the center of your marriage. It can't be the center of, you know, it's not all about the children. And you have to be a whole person in Christ to be a good mother, like to be the effective mother.
Yeah.
You have to have, you and your husband have to prioritize that relationship before you can effectively parent well. You have to be on the same page. And so you both have to continuously lay your lives down for each other, for your children. As Christ laid his life down for us, we have to emulate that in marriage and then also for our children. And so a lot of, like, one of the big struggles that I think is ongoing for me is that mental reframing. Mm-hmm. And the laying down of what I want to do, because what I need to do is over here, and what reality is this, and what my kid needs is important as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't all revolve around what I want.
Right.
You know?
I think for me, and I think I've said this on here before, but I remember when I became a mom, I thought, man, I feel like my sanctification went backwards because I was so patient before I had kids. I was so patient. As a teacher, I was great. And I wasn't even a Christian for half of it. You know, and I was like, what is going on? And really, nothing brings the dross of selfishness mm-hmm. to the surface mm-hmm. like marriage and children,
mm-hmm.
because those are people that you are around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're around them all the time. There's not a, and sometimes that can be a hard part of motherhood for me, of
there's no break.
Mm-hmm.
It's a roller coaster that you're on.
I have that as
doesn't stop.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Mine says not having time for yourself and feeling like the job doesn't have a break time or a time off.
Yeah.
So there isn't a clear time to stop and recharge. There's no, like when you're working a job, you know at this time you're done.
Right.
There's not really that
clock.
Yeah. There's no, it's like, when do you do it? When do you recharge a little? When do you have time to like have mental clarity? It's very hard to navigate when to do that and not feel like you're not doing something else you should be doing.
Right. Yeah. And it's hard because for me too, I feel sometimes like the years, and maybe this is because I'm a sentimental person, but the years are just slipping through my fingers and I want to hold on to them and I want to cherish them and I want to just soak them up, but they're going to go to sleep and they're going to wake up different tomorrow, you know? And it's just this feeling of, I just want things to pause for a second so I can either clear my brain or do something I want to do or think about something. Like I want to be able to learn how to handle this situation before I encounter it again at 5 a.m., you know? And there isn't that break. And sometimes we can get so selfish thinking, but I just need a break. I just need this. I just need. No, what we need is to press into the Father.
Yeah.
What we need is to, like you said, Kate, we need to look at, okay, what did Jesus do for his sheep? What did he do? He laid down his life. And we see from his prayer in the garden, I was trying to find it. I can't remember which gospel has it, but you see Jesus just praying intensely before his crucifixion of, you know, Lord, not my will, but yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that struggle with him of, he was not looking forward to what the cross had for him. That was not something that, you know, he thought, yay. But at the same time, we see in, I believe it's Hebrews, it says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's joy in following the Lord, and we can endure something far easier than a cross of laying our lives down for our kids to say, you know what? Yes. Would I love a spa day? Yes. But you actually need groceries. So we're going to spend the money on that, you know? And just little things like, oh, I would really love to just get through this task in an efficient, timely manner so that I can go on to whatever I need to do. And that's very much my wiring coming out there. And then you have somebody going, Mama, can I help you? And you're like, oh, yeah, you can. Of course you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you want to be joyful in your response. And I started helping an elderly couple take care of their home once every few weeks. And something that hit me, I was over at their house yesterday, and something that hit me was how quiet it was, how clean it was, even though I was there to help clean. You know, I was like, this is the cleanest house I've ever cleaned. But there were no toys. Nobody was coming up to me saying, Mama, can I help you scrub the toilet?
Yeah.
Mama, can I help you do this? Can I help you with this? And I thought, this is their everyday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in this peaceful pocket once every 3 weeks, you know, but this is their everyday. And they have had children. They have, you know, a very joyful family and they're very sweet. But this motherhood season that feels so intense, one day, our everyday is going to be much quieter.
Mm-hmm.
And one day we're going to listen to a sermon and we're probably going to look next to us and go, gosh, I wish there were some sticky fingers on me right now. Gosh, I wish somebody would put a sticker on my face as my husband's trying to preach. You know?
Yeah.
Not that that's happened. But, you know, I wish I had a baby to snuggle and maybe even one that was having a blowout that I needed to get up and go change both of us. You know, like I wish you were going to look back and say, I wish those moments were there. And that doesn't mean that they're not hard now. And it's okay for us to acknowledge the fact that it is hard to lay aside our desires, because it's hard when you're a selfish human.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say, I'm being selfish and I need to lay that down. But there is a sweetness that we can cling to in that of, these are sweet times.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something recently that said, most of our children's lives, we're going to know them as adults.
Mm-hmm.
For this brief window, we get to know them as children. And what a sweet blessing that is to get to walk next to them and train them up and see them and see, like what you were saying, Jordan, see them make those changes of switching from, you know, you saying the things to them, all of a sudden encouraging you with their own wisdom that the Lord has given them, you know, even if it's things that you've said to them before, the Lord is still growing them in that wisdom. And how precious and sweet is that, that we get a front row seat. You know, I got to see Jack learn to read this year, and it was such a sweet thing to see him fight for it, because that was not a naturally easy thing for him. So to see him fight for that, and then see the words just start to form into sentences and books, and you know, it's so sweet. And we get to see that kind of weaving together by the Lord's doing through their childhood. And it's going to mean that they have to learn skills. So there's going to be struggle. They're going to miss the flower in the bowl 9 times out of 10 for a good while before you have a fully formed batch of cookies, you know, and it's just part of it. But one day you're going to be making cookies by yourself.
Yeah.
And not to be, you know, Debbie Downer about it, but that's just the reality of this is such a short pocket of time, and let's do it well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to lay that aside for a while, you know, but sometimes you get so tunnel vision that you're like.
And the thing is, when you have the age child, when they miss the bowl with flour all the time, that is the age of child that falls asleep on you when you're watching a movie.
Yes.
And it's like, you don't get one with the other. You don't have the teenage girl that's making the cookies for you and also the little girl whose hand fits in yours and all the things that are about to make me cry. Right. So it's like, you have sweet things at every age, but don't wish away the sweet things from this age because you wish your kitchen was cleaner.
Yeah.
Or because you wish you had a quiet time that was actually quiet. Mm-hmm. It's like, enjoy the season that you are in, because that season changes and you don't get it back. So cherish the season and slow the heck down enough to be able to not wish away. And that is my big thing, is like, slow down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's okay. And that's what Jared and I were just saying yesterday, because Oak is in a raccoon stage. So
me too.
Elsie and Oak are joint raccoons. But being okay with standards going down when we're in raccoon stage, that's fine.
Yes.
We can eat snacks for supper and no one will die.
Right.
Like, if there's an afternoon like there was yesterday when he just wants me to hold him nonstop or dump out my spices from the spice drawer, then that's a night that we say, okay, not gonna have this amazing burger bowl situation that I was planning with all the sauces and the pickled red onions that are amazing. I think I said it wrong again. Pickled red onions that are amazing. We're gonna have cheese and crackers and an apple.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And maybe a meat stick if you're still hungry. Like, being okay with standards going down so that you don't go crazy and that you can enjoy raccoon season with a baby that needs you to hold them, take them outside, let's swing in the swing for a while. That everyone will be happier and you will get to enjoy the season without wishing it away.
Yeah.
So slow down. Lower your standards.
I was going to say, practically, one of the things that's been most helpful for me, and it might not be for everybody, might just be if you tend to lean a little bit more extroverted. Like, I don't know what it's like to want more alone time than I do. I don't require a lot of alone time. I genuinely enjoy being just with people more than others, I've realized. But one of the things that has filled my cup up as a young mom, where there's just, it's a little chaotic sometimes, you know, sometimes the day can feel a little chaotic, is just texting a friend and saying, hey, do you want to bring your chaos to and join it with mine? And we can sit and have the kids in a backyard or on, you know, in a living room if it's a rainy day, or do you want to go to the library real quick and keep them in the kids' room for an hour? And then all of a sudden it just feels easier.
Yeah.
Like, even though the chaos multiplies,
yes,
there's somebody else there with you to be like, it's fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's sweet.
Yeah. And possibly that seems so easy to me because I have one. And so I was actually telling you Sunday, I think, Jordan, that sometimes if I need to get stuff done, I'm like begging my neighbor Terry to let her kids come play with Audrey.
That's why I just love that. It's like, can my kids come up on Thursday then?
Yes.
I have to work?
Because some of the nitty gritty things that I have to do can be more difficult because I can trust her with a lot. She just turned 3. Like, she's not going to go find a screw and eat it.
Right.
But also she's 3, you know? So we're just at that age where I don't have another older child that could be like, hey, mom, Audrey did that, you know, or whatever. Audrey's not at that stage where she could do that for a younger sibling. So sometimes it just is easier for me to find people and be like, do you want to come over and or just send your kids over. Like, you can all come over and we can hang out and I'll make like cookies or something. Or
I love that about like, you. You're so sweet.
It just fills my cup up to be with other like-minded moms that are parenting joyfully. And we can also be honest and be like, hey, this has actually been really hard for me this week. Can you pray for this situation? Or how should I handle, have you dealt with this before? But that's been a very practical thing that has helped me a lot. Just saying, even, you know, Saturday, Audrey's birthday party was full of beautiful chaos. So many kids everywhere. The house was, well, it was going to be emptier because it was supposed to be outside, but the rain, you know. So I was like, okay, I guess we're just going to have 1,000 people in our home. It's fine. And that part doesn't bother me, but I was like, man, are we all going to fit in here? And it was the most... enjoy. It was so fun.
It was so
chaotic, and I just loved it. Audrey just had a blast, and
I was gonna say, I loved it that you were like, does my house smell like skunk? And me and Matt were like, yeah, it does. And you're like, okay, cool. And we're just smiling the whole time. Like, there's nothing wrong with
what happens. Yes. So the night before her birthday party, we live in the country. We live on 8 acres. So it's not uncommon to smell a skunk outside. However, a skunk must have sprayed right by the air conditioner. And then it sucked into the entire house. Ben and I were giving Audrey a bath. And Ben goes, what is that? He was like, it's a skunk. Like, and it was, AC was full blast. We were right by the vent. He was like, turn the air off, turn it off. And so I'm like hustling to get there, and it filled the house. It was bad. So, but then I went nose blind to it because I'm done smelling it now. Yeah. And I'm just done. And so the next day I did not have a candle lit or whatever. I was totally nose blind to it.
You'd been sleeping in it.
Yes. Yeah. So. However, I walked up to Mallory and Jordan and I said, I feel like it might have a faint odor. And they were like, yeah.
It's not faint, actually.
It's not faint.
Yeah, but we were just happy about it. Like, yeah, it does. It smells a lot like skunk in here. Anyways.
I lit that big old toxic candle that I have and just came back to the conversation holding this candle.
Great, man.
Anyway,
but you're saying
it was, she said, which they've raised their kids and so their house is pretty quiet unless Audrey comes over now. And I said, did you feel, I was just curious because, you know, she doesn't have, her house is not chaotic or noisy or anything anymore. And I said, did you feel like it was chaotic in here today? And she said, yeah, but it was really cool. She said it was really neat to see so many kids in one room and they weren't fighting. Nobody was biting each other. Nobody was losing their minds. I mean, you'd have an occasional like, hey, I think at one point Audrey came up and said, I can't get to the Barbie house because all my friends are in front of it.
Because there's 47
people. So many of my friends also like Barbie houses. And I said, we'll just go up and say, beep, beep, can I play? And I was kind of jokey, but she did it. And of course, because they're all so sweet, they let her in to play as well. But that has been really encouraging, parenting with like-minded parents who discipline their kids and are on top of discussions with their children because they want to enjoy their children and they want other people to enjoy their children. And so I think at the end of the day, and especially in the mornings when I'm about to enter parenting for another day, thinking about, well, of course the end goal is that she knows Christ and that she loves the Lord. And I want to enjoy my child. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to parent so I can enjoy her for all the years to come. And I want other people to enjoy her. And if she is a terror because I have let her become one, that's my fault. And therefore, I will not enjoy her and other people will not enjoy her either. And so, you know, bringing that back to, of course, we want our kids to know Christ. And we also want joyful children who are a joy to be around.
Yeah.
You know.
What's the scripture? Discipline your child and they will give you rest.
It's like, yes.
You're feeling exhausted with your child. Spend some time in serious discipline.
Yes.
And then the flip side of that, of your tip that you just gave about hanging out with others,
If you're like me and you desire a time of quietness every once in a blue moon. So my family is very unique, so this may not help anyone else, but my family is ingrained with Jared Sparks' DNA, which is I want to get up as early as possible. So Jared just really likes getting up very early, and I don't, but my family does. So I have changed myself a lot into I now get up decently early. I'm like 5 or 5:30. That's not that early compared to others. So ever since Ransom was a baby, I don't know why, but Jared has said the phrase, Sparksmen get up early. So I had to put a time limit on when Sparksmen were allowed to wake up who are under a certain age. So Sparks boys are not allowed to get up in our house until the clock says 6:00. I told you guys that. And then, wait, did I already talk about this, about how they have to wake up at 7 now?
No.
They've already told this on the podcast. No?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah, but
okay, so 6:00, they were allowed to get up. But now the school is over because I desperately needed a little bit of time without people talking to me and needed to be able to think for a little bit in the mornings. Now Sparks' children are allowed to get up at 7:00 because we're done with school. So you get the privilege of sleeping in. They were all really devastated about that. But this is a way that our home is not being a kid-centered home.
Yes.
It's a parent health is very important too.
Right.
And if parents need some time to connect in the mornings before we start our day, then children will arrive in the home at 7:00, not 6:00. And that gives me some time to do some things in the morning that I would like to do. And then also Jared and I some time to talk. Mm-hmm. So maybe just being reminded that you're the boss of you, other than God and your husband, obviously. But like, if something is not great for you and the way that your home is running, troubleshoot, talk to a friend, like try to think of some different ways that might make your schedule a little more manageable and then go from there.
And I remember a couple of episodes ago, I don't know what we were talking about, but you said, if you're wanting to get up early and you're struggling to, just pray that the Lord wakes you up.
He
just does.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there have been times I've had to get up for something and my alarm for whatever reason hasn't gone off, but he's woken me up anyway because I need to go.
Yeah.
And that was especially true in postpartum if we had to be somewhere. Mm. And he will.
Yeah.
He'll be faithful to.
Okay. Whose turn is it now? This is a long episode. That's okay. Let's go with it. Do you have a certain time you have to be back?
June has dance tonight, so I probably need to leave in about 10 minutes.
Okay. Go ahead.
I also had laying your desires down. So that was, I had three. So Kate, well done.
It was nice to know that we had the same thing.
Yeah.
Had that one too. So it's funny that we were all three.
Yeah. It's hard to die
same on that one.
Yes.
It is. It really is. The last one that I have is mothering through grief. Not to turn it difficult again, but so navigating times of grief as a mom, and this kind of pairs with the laying your desires down, because when you're grieving the loss of a parent or a family member or any kind of grief, you can go through grief for obviously other reasons too, but anytime you're a mom but you're also grieving deeply, it's hard because just because you're grieving doesn't mean that your children don't want breakfast. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're still waking up to little faces in the morning that are going, Mama, what's for breakfast? Can I make scrambled eggs? And you're thinking, oh my gosh, that's a whole situation that's going to happen, you know.
Yeah, I barely can function right now.
Yeah. And there are days where you really just what you want to do as a mom is to wallow and cry and hole up. And there are times where you can do that. This is kind of funny. I don't know if this is good advice or not. So, but one thing for me that's been helpful in navigating, you know, the loss of relationship with my parents was Brandon will, in the afternoon sometimes, if he can tell I'm in a really just hard season, because grief ebbs and flows, right? So when things are super fresh, hard things have just happened, you've just lost somebody or something devastating has happened, like it's very intense. And then And then, you know, it gets better and you get a little bit farther from it. But then there's going to be times where somebody asks something or you see something and it's going to spark that memory for you. So it's going to ebb and flow. And there's going to be days that just feel really, really intense and really difficult. And not that I schedule my emotional moments, but sometimes as a mom, you kind of have to a little
you
bit.
You would schedule your emotional moments.
Well, so full transparency, this last week was really hard for me leading up to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, Father's Day, those are both just really hard days for me. And Brandon knew I was having a hard week. And if you're mothering in a season of grief, be honest with your husband. Tell your husband, hey, this is where I'm at. Mm-hmm. This is what I'm working through. If I'm short with you or I'm off or, you know, anything like that, this is what's going on in my head. Having somebody know what your internal monologue is really, really helpful because they can help you, like you said, troubleshoot some of those things. And for your husband to just know, okay, she's having a really hard day today. This would be a great day for me to grill chicken for dinner so she's not cooking, you know, things like that. But the girls were napping last week and Brandon came and he goes, hey, I have some work I need to go do. I'm going to take Jack and give you an afternoon to yourself. And I was like, okay, now is a really great time to have a moment. If I need to, you know,
let
myself just kind of reflect because you can't, as a mom, you can't wallow in your grief all day, every day. Mm-hmm. You just can't because one, it's not healthy for your children, you know, and it can, not to say you can't cry in front of them by any means, but it can be scary as a kid to see your mom struggle that intensely and just wallow like that. That would be really scary as a kid to see. And so because as a mom, you are somebody's stability and you are somebody's strength and you are somebody's comfort. And when you see that person break, I can imagine that would be a really hard thing. And if you have children that are older, they're a little bit more aware of what's going on. And I didn't realize how off I was one time until Jack came up to me and he started, you know, rubbing my back and he was like, "Are you okay, Mama?" And I was like, "Oh, I was trying really hard to hold it together today." And I realized, oh, he's picking up on those things. And not that you have to have, you know, a brave face all the time, but sometimes if you're mothering through grief, find a pocket of time, you know, drop your kids off. Like you said, Kate, find a friend.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I need some time. I'm having a hard day. Can my kids come play for the morning so that I can go and read my Bible, pray, cry, journal, do whatever I need to do. Just have a little bit of a breather before, you know, jumping back into it. Because like we said, motherhood doesn't stop. But that doesn't mean there aren't things that need to be processed. So finding, not that you have to schedule your breakdowns, but it is helpful to find a good time where you're like, okay.
So fun. It's great advice. So practical. One of my things is similar to this is being sick as a mom. When you're sick, that's one of the hardest things for me too is when you feel really awful and you still have to get up and scramble the eggs and you're like, oh, dying. So mine is find a friend who is your substitute teacher.
Yeah.
But your substitute mom. Or if you have parents or grandparents that live close. But the hard thing is usually when you're sick, your kids are also sick. Because usually like everyone in the family is sick, which makes it a little harder. So my other advice in this is have freezer meals, have the milk pumped, like have the things ahead of time so that if you do get really sick, dad, friend, grandparent, whoever can step in to help and just have those people on standby like, hey, if something really crazy ever happened and I'm sick and my kids are sick, would you be willing to get in that ditch with me?
Yeah.
And there's usually some like I would totally be willing to do that for people. And I know that there's people at our church that would be willing to do that for me. I would call either of you. And I know you'd be like, it's fine.
Yeah.
But
we're all going to get it.
Give it a week
and we're all going to be exposed anyway.
So just having that makes you feel so much better if you are sick, knowing that you have the people that you can call if this gets too much to bear.
Yeah.
And chances are, usually doesn't get too much to bear. You're able to like put a movie on for children and muddle through and just know that it's a couch day for everyone. But just mentally knowing that I have a backup, I have a substitute teacher.
Yes.
Yep. It helps to know that you're not in it alone. So.
Yes. So. And on the grief aspect of it too, 2 Corinthians 1:3-11. I won't read the whole thing. But it's a, in verse 3, it says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in our affliction so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." Mm-hmm. And so whether that's sickness, whether that's grief, any affliction that you are in, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, any of those things, you will be comforted by the Lord. He will provide comfort, whether it's in the form of a friend dropping off, you know, groceries on your front step, mm-hmm. or saying, "Hey, let me come help you sanitize your house," or "I'll take the kids so you can puke," you know, mm-hmm. or "I'll take the kids so you can cry," or have some time, you know, whatever comfort we get. First of all, remember, ultimately, the comfort's coming from the Father, even if nobody shows up, even if no one shows up mm-hmm. as your cavalry. You know, you have the Lord, and mm-hmm. He is enough. His grace is sufficient. His strength is sufficient. And He will sustain you in that. And turning the focus from yourself, again, laying your desires down, but turning your focus from yourself to other people. So if you're in a season of grief, yes, you need to grieve, process, don't wallow. Don't sit there. Think about, okay, I'm learning lessons now. I'm stewarding this hardship now so that I can turn around and be a comfort to somebody else, to call them up and out mm-hmm. of the pit, to say, "Hey, this is how the Lord provided for me. This is how God was comforting to me in this loss or in this season or in this sickness or whatever it is." Being other people minded mm-hmm. in that, it, again, whatever affliction it is, being other people minded of, "I'm going to learn," mm-hmm. "I'm going to learn how to steward this trial so that I can turn around and comfort other people who are in a similar trial," and seeing that there's purpose pain, whether it is a stomach flu or whether it is the loss of a loved one, there's a purpose in your pain, whether it's to bring you closer to the Lord, which of course will happen as well, but or to learn something that can practically help somebody else, or a comfort from scripture that you can turn around and share with somebody. So thinking in your trial, thinking about, okay, how can I turn a profit on this? How can I learn from this struggle? How can I learn from this trial to then turn around and be a blessing to other people?
Yeah. And I've seen God provide so many times through difficulty, just what we needed, even when there wasn't people that were able to come and help. It's like God provided really good nap times mm-hmm. for the rest of the kid. You know what I mean? Or God provided whatever, food or whatever it was, just so that we could have whatever we needed in that mm-hmm. in that difficult season. So trusting that God really does provide for our needs, even if you don't have the friend to call or the grandma or the whatever.
Right.
So, Kate, you got any more to share? I know.
Oh, I was just going to read, it's Ephesians 3:20. "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than we ask or imagine, according to his power at work within us, to him be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus through all generations, forever and ever." And that's been really encouraging, because there are just so many moments where I think, wow, I'm really unequipped. Like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Or there's moments where I think it's a silly decision, but I'm like, what do I do? You know, or there were moments, especially early on, when she would get a virus and I would think, what am I supposed to do? How do I know if she's struggling to breathe? How do I know what to give her? And I remember, you know, those moments where you just know, you're like, this is what I need to try. This is what I need to do. And looking back, and I can notice them more now, because they're so frequent, but that's not because you're wise Mm-mm. and you know when to do. Those, you know, that instant knowing of this is what you do now is not the mother's instinct. It's just the Holy Spirit inside of you. And it just feels like nothing. It feels like your brain came out of thin air to tell you what to do. But it's not a booming voice saying, go this way. It's just the Spirit working inside of you, giving you wisdom to mother, because we don't have any of that on our own.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think one of the things I started doing was writing down all the little, quote unquote, mm-hmm. ways that he's been faithful and he's provided, even in the tiniest detail. Mm-hmm. So when I'm having one of those really big moments where it feels overwhelming and I just don't know what to do, or I'm feeling overwhelmed because we might have to go to the ER, I can open that note and just think, well, has provided all these things. He has been faithful. He is faithful to me, and he will continue to sustain me in the good work of being a mother.
Yeah, it's awesome. What an amazing privilege it is to be a mom. It's like, what an amazing blessing and privilege it is to be a mom, that God would be so kind and generous to us to give us children and sanctify us through it. Like, really? Like, the cutest, sweetest, snuggliest, amazing thing he gave me. And not only is this such an amazing blessing to me, but he grows me in Christ's likeness through this thing. It's amazing. Such a blessing. Thank you, Lord. Happy a little bit late Mother's Day. Hope this was an encouragement to you, and thanks for listening. Until next time.
Hey, everyone. We want to thank you so much for listening to the Fruitful and Fearless podcast and continuing to come back. You guys have certainly been an encouragement to us, and we hope we've been an encouragement to you as well. We want to continue this work, and we need your help to do that.
If you'd head over to the Fruitful and Fearless website, it's just fruitfulandfearless.com. You can find memberships there that are different tiers that contain different benefits to you as well. If you want to just support us for the heck of it because you're enjoying the show, that's always a blessing as well. But we try to make it even more worth it for you with recipes, groups for homeschooling and cooking, baking, natural health. We try to put as many resources on there as we can. But thank you for your support. It greatly helps our family.